You're listening to Profiled, a podcast by NCCM, the National Council of Canadian Muslims, where we profile leaders of our community who inspire us every single day. My name is Omar Kamisa, and each week we'll be sitting with these amazing individuals to talk about their lives, the lessons they've learned, and their experiences being profiled. Assalamu alaikum. Hello and welcome back to episode number 2 of the Profiled Podcast. As always, I'm your host here, Omar Kamisa, the Community Engagement Officer here at NCCM. And this week we have something special for you guys. You know, in this living in this COVID-19 world where everyone's on lockdown, everyone's in quarantine in their own homes, everyone has to be a little bit more creative. We couldn't get Mustafa into town to do those live podcasts that we like to do. So everything's going to be happening on Zoom and on Skype via the internet. So last week, Mustafa, our CEO here, Mustafa Farooq, had a chance to sit down with the leader of the official opposition here in Ontario and the leader of the Ontario's new Democratic Party, Andrea Horvath, and really have a conversation. Right, have a conversation reflecting on the COVID-19 response, supporting the charitable sector, addressing issues like carding. And it was really an informative session where we were able to take questions from the audience as well. And we would love to share that audio with you. So sit back, enjoy this conversation between Mustafa Farooq and Andrea Horvath, and we will be back at the end of the episode. Thank you guys so much again for tuning in, and I hope you guys enjoy this interview.
What a way to start the morning. It is so nice to be joined this morning by the leader of the official opposition in Ontario's NDP, Andrea Horvath. Salam and welcome to the National Council of Canadian Muslims Leaders Roundtable and in partnership with Islamic Relief Canada. This is going to be a series where we talk to political leaders from across party lines and leaders of government. We will have a chance to share your questions and concerns with our leaders and stay informed on issues. I'm your host and CEO of NCCM, Mustafa Farooq. And really the reason that we're doing this is because in times where physical distancing is so critically important, we think that social distancing as well as intellectual distancing shouldn't become the case. So this is an opportunity to meet with folks like Leader Horvath and the other folks that will come and join us to have formed discussions about the issues that you're thinking about every day. And so I'm really glad to be joined by Leader Horvath. How are you doing today?
I'm really great, Mustafa. I'm really great. And I'm honored to be able to spend a little while with you and have a conversation. And I really like the way you describe what you're doing. And I appreciate that you're doing that. You know, physical distancing is necessary, but intellectual and social distancing is not. And that's this is a great way to achieve those things, right? You know, that connection. So good on you. And I'm honored to be a guest on your program.
So to start, I think we need to acknowledge that we're living through some pretty strange times with COVID-19 being what it is. So how are you managing? How are you spending your time?
Well, there's no doubt that it's a difficult time, and people are having a challenging time, kind of just figuring out what to do in these circumstances. And for folks, it can be very, very lonely. So my heart goes out to folks who are struggling with loneliness. I myself, my son and I we're doing what most people are doing, right? We're staying home, and I want to thank all those folks that are stepping up to the plate and doing what we've been asked to do to try to reduce the spread of the virus. But yeah, I spend a lot of time here at my home. I do my once a week grocery shopping, but I do find that I'm very, very busy trying to connect with community through, you know, platforms like this one and others. I'm still available to the media and to my team at Queen's Park, who are not really at Queen's Park, but my team and my MPPs and I still have a weekly caucus meeting, but it's on a Tuesday through a phone conversation on Tuesdays. And so we are continuing to try to keep an eye on the government and as the official opposition, and identify gaps that are existing in the policies and programs that they're bringing forward, and and to encourage them to, you know, to step up and help people during this crisis. But so, yeah, even though we're doing things differently, still staying very, very busy, very, very busy.
My mom was saying this morning that, you know, no matter how much things say, you know, change, it's remarkable how in so many ways they stay the same.
Your mom's very wise. That's true.
She is indeed very wise. She also noted that while, because my little brother has been calling, you know, them, you know, saying, okay, boomer to all of, you know, parents, that she suspects that for the next little while, you know, our generation will be called okay zoomers. There's a way in which we've all transitioned into having these conversations and living our lives online, which is obviously, it's a new experience, but I'm happy to hear that you're out there doing the work that, of course, folks in Ontario are hoping that our elected officials do, which is, of course, think about ways that we can all get through this together.
Absolutely. So,
I mean, obviously, these times have been pretty taxing for Ontarians in general. Beyond the challenges of social isolation, which obviously are incredible, I think many folks are worried about the present, like in terms of how are we going to get through this right now, but they're also worried about the future. Will there be a job for them to go back to when this is all over? What action are you taking in response? What's been your approach?
Well, you know, I'm glad you identified that anxiety that people are feeling. Certainly, you're right. I mean, we've been through the move from March to April, and people were worried about paying the rent and worried about paying the bills. And now we're up against the 1st of May coming in just over you know, almost a week's time. And so people are now starting to worry about that. And lots of folks got through that April, you know, rent, but and mortgage payments, but now coming into May, folks are really nervous. So what, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that we've identified is that, unfortunately, here in Ontario, our government doesn't seem to be stepping up with a lot of direct support for people and businesses. Certainly the federal government has a lot of programs and they keep tweaking them and adapting them as gaps are identified. And that's great. I mean, I'm not at all critical of that. I think it's absolutely necessary, but other provinces, they're certainly also doing some real, direct income support programs for people, whether it's rent supplements, whether it's emergency funds, whether it's top-ups to low-wage jobs. These things are happening in other provinces, but not here. And the reason why we've been trying to get our provincial government to step up and support people and businesses right now is exactly because when this is over, we want to make sure people and businesses are not so destitute or you know, in the case of people or so unable, financially ruined that they're not able to start their business up again. So the more we can support people now, the better come the end of this shape we'll all be in to be able to pick back up and rebuild. And I guess that's one of the things we're focused on. So you're right. I mean, we are doing what we can to support people now, to encourage the government to support people now. But it really is about also making sure that help is visionary in that it's going to mean that we can come out of this in better shape and ready to get the economy back up and running and get people back to work, because, you know, our economy is built on a lot of small business and a lot of medium-sized business. And if those companies aren't able to, you know, stay afloat, then where are the jobs going to be when this is all over? So, yeah, we're really working hard on that. And it's, you know, it's something that we always have to keep our eye on. We always have to keep our eye on, you know, what's going to happen at the end of all of this, and how do we prepare now to be in the best shape possible once this is over?
So I'm going to say, I'm going to ask you, I think that that's all incredibly important. I think you're right on the money in terms of thinking about the long-term solution. So what would be your top three things that you think there should be immediate action on in terms of, you know, dealing with the present challenges and also getting to the future? I know that it's not fair to ask you to rank them like a listicle, But just the top three takeaways for folks.
Okay, and so I'm going to the healthcare stuff aside and just talk about, you know, people and their needs. I would say the one thing would be rent assistance, like so rent supplements or assistance for rent for both people and businesses. So that's just one though, because it's rent. So people and businesses, rent support, and what we've actually asked the government specifically for an up to 80% rent subsidy for anybody who's in a financial crisis and receiving emergency supports or having their income or revenues down. We've asked for up to 80% of a rent subsidy for a minimum of $2,500 a month for the next 3 months. And we've asked for on the business side for a rent subsidy for small and medium-sized businesses to a maximum of $10,000 a month for the next couple of months. And included in those that ask, particularly on the business side, was a request to have utilities, payments for utilities deferred with no penalties and no interest, so that those businesses can, you know, see their way through this in the next couple of months. And so that's one of the big ones that we think is necessary, because, you know, when you think about it, that doesn't only help, you know, the individual or the business, but it also helps the landlords and the owners of property, right? And so it really would make a big difference in people's lives, I think. We've also asked for an emergency benefit. We had asked for that, you know, before the federal programs even, you know, came into being. We had asked the provincial government to quickly get some money in people's pockets. We had asked for a $2,000 emergency benefit, and we think that that's still something that's valuable. There are people still falling through the cracks of the federal programs. You can just, and it's nobody's fault. I mean, it's really hard to design a program with such specificity that you actually capture everyone. So we know that people are still falling through cracks, and so we want to see income support for folks as well. And I mean, another big one that we've asked the government to undertake is a requirement that the auto insurance industry give people a break. I mean, folks aren't driving, nobody's going anywhere, so we want to make sure that that folks who are already paying too much in auto insurance are getting a break on their auto insurance as well. So that's another piece. We're asking the government to have the insurance industry reduce the premiums by 50% for the next several months, so that folks can catch a break on the bills. So, I mean, there's lots of detail to all of these things, but we see what we're trying to do, though. We're trying to really help people financially weather the storm, right?
For sure. No, thank you. I appreciate that. So one of the things that we at NCCM have been thinking about a lot is the effects that COVID-19 has been having on the charitable sector. So, I mean, we've been advocating for the charitable sector because these are times when those organizations, those, you know, women's shelters, the organizations that are distributing food, the organizations that are housing folks, you know, on one hand, they're stretched for resources because their donor base is tapped out. And on the other hand, they're experiencing increased demand. So what are your suggestions, or how are you approaching this question of supporting charities during this time, or the nonprofit sector more broadly?
No, you're absolutely right, Mustafa. And what we did is when we put together this plan we called it To Save Main Street. But we purposely included not-for-profit organizations and charities in that plan. So that the $10,000 rent help, for example, the utility help, for example, because you're absolutely right. I mean, there are so many organizations that, you know, that they, you know, they are there for the most vulnerable, and they rely on a donor base, as you said, that's not able to give right now, and yet the demand on services is going up. So we want to see not only those kinds of, you know, breaks on in terms of you know, outflow of cash to think for things like rent or utilities, but we also want to see a fund set up, a stabilization fund by the government that can be accessed by the charitable sector to help them to meet the needs of the community. I was saying to you a little bit earlier, as we were getting ready to have the formal conversation, that the mosque here in Hamilton, that's one of the ones in my riding, was talking to the imam, and he was very very concerned about exactly that. I mean, with Ramadan coming, folks not being able to celebrate the breaking of the fast, the iftar, it's going to be hard for the community overall, but for those most vulnerable people who are lower income, for example, for whom the mosque, and the mosque is so much more than just a place to for everyone, right? But the services that you're talking about, these kinds of supports, very, very, very worried that the capacity is just not going to be there, and people are going to suffer as a result. So we are trying to get the government to step up to try to relieve some of the financial burden, but also to make available some funding be accessed to kind of backfill where the donor base hasn't been able to step up because of lost wages and salaries and things like that.
For sure. I'm just going to, before we get into our next topic, I'm just going to note for folks that are listening in, we're here today with Leader Horvath, leader of the official opposition in Ontario, and leader of the NDP in Ontario. We're so happy to be joining her. If you have questions, put them up in the comment section on Facebook, and she's here to answer your questions today. Let's jump into the next subject. On March 31st, the government of Ontario passed a new emergency order in dealing with COVID-19. And it sets out what many consider to be a return to mandatory carding. So while we understand maybe the policy rationale behind such an order, it's hard to not forget how carding has had incredibly disproportionate effects on racialized minorities. So for example, on, racialized Black folks, including Black Muslims, on Indigenous folks, and on Middle Eastern looking folks. So my question to you is, maybe can you help us act what these powers are? And for those of us who are concerned about whether this is a return to carding, maybe help us understand what these are looking like.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this because it's something I think that we fought for a long time to deal with the carding issue. I mean, really before the emergency order was put in place, carding hadn't completely been eliminated in Ontario, as you know, but certainly we've been working hard with yourself and with your organization and so many organizations for a number of years now to address carding in Ontario, and we proudly believe that carding should be banned, period. But what this emergency order does is it allows an officer of the peace, or like a police officer or a bylaw officer, for example, to enforce the emergency order around distancing. And what it enables them to do, what is clearly written in the order is that they are able to approach someone and require the person provide a name and their address to the police officer or the bylaw officer for the purposes of I guess receiving a fine, for example, if they're going to trying to fine them for being for not being distancing properly, but it also is something that then we don't know any details about anything else, like where's the information going, what's happening to the information. We don't know that the government has we don't see any kind of acknowledgement whatsoever about how this can very much be a return of carding insofar as certain populations being targeted for attention from police and or bylaw officers, and I mean we know that's something that happens. It's a systemic issue, and we need to make sure that it's not happening. And the troubling thing is also that I don't know that there's any commitment to to keeping statistics so that we can keep an eye on how this all goes. But it's troubling. There's no doubt.
Okay, so maybe just for folks who are maybe a little new, I understand, for folks like myself who've been thinking about carding for a long time, the problems of it might make a lot of sense, but maybe could you give a short example of why you think that might be problematic?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, what one of the things that we've seen with this, with the way that the law is meted out amongst the population is it's not equitable. So we see an overrepresentation of people in the criminal justice system that are black or brown, usually fact, young black men, right?
In fact, black folks are 20 times, and obviously a large proportion of the Canadian Muslim community is racialized black. And black folks are 20 times more likely to die in an encounter with police in Toronto than the average.
Right, and so these are realities. These are systemic issues that have been ongoing for far too long. And you know, and if we're not prepared to look that in the face and deal with it, then we'll continue to see that kind of injustice happening, and that's just not acceptable. And so that's why yourself and ourselves, particularly Jagmeet Singh, who's now the federal leader, who was my deputy leader at the provincial level, took on this carding issue with community, because it was it's just not acceptable to see that happen, there's all kinds of systemic racism that's occurring with a black community, the brown community, Indigenous folks, and that it's just not something that we should be allowing to occur, you know, in Canada, in Ontario, in 2020. If you're not raising this issue, if we're not demanding that we have the data to then determine how policy can be made to change track and to prevent this from happening in the future, it's going to continue. So we're committed to that, and that's why we have raised this, and with the government, we've sent some correspondence to the government about exactly this issue, because we're concerned, and we've also requested that they do keep data, because we want to know how the enforcement of the emergency order affects different groups of people in Ontario, and we know that there's likely going to be an inequity there as well.
So my one concern with that might be that it might be a little, like, is that only, might that mean, maybe, and maybe just help me understand this, might that mean that we might only be able to backwards and be like, oh, that really was problematic? Is there a way that we could, for example, so recently NCCM signed on to a statement with Amnesty International calling for oversight immediately, and this is just sort of general advice for folks in Canada for emergency orders that are being brought in. Do you think that would be something that you'd consider pushing for, some sort of oversight over the way that emergency orders are being dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly something that we can look at. I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, the way a lot of this is rolling out. It seems to be a bit of it's a new scenario. Nobody really knows how to handle it, and that's what's dangerous, really. I mean, that's what's dangerous about it, because a lot of it seems to be in the napkin, on the fly, just doing things in a kind of with an urgency, without a lot of forethought into what the impacts could possibly be, and so. You know, it's interesting. We've just hired a new information and privacy commissioner. There are some opportunities, I think, with the current information and privacy commissioner to have that person, who's an independent officer of the legislature, engage in this particular issue. And then there's the new one's not going to be starting until the beginning of June, I think, or July. So we have our current information and privacy commissioner. So that's one source. I mean, unfortunately, what we have in Ontario is a much watered down anti-racism directorate. You may know that the NDP pushed for many years for the Liberal government to put together an anti-racism directorate to try to start dealing with some of this, all of the systemic racism that's happening throughout government and governmental services and organizations. And we were proud to have accomplished that. It wasn't perfect, but it was getting up onto its feet. And then the Conservative government has really you know, pulled a lot of the funding and reduced the effectiveness of the organization. So where we would have been able to engage the anti-racism directorate in exactly that kind of an effort, I fear that that's going to be much more difficult. But certainly we do have, our human rights tribunal and our human rights officer, and she's been very good as well. So those are some of the ideas of where we could probably look to get some, somebody, if you will, having some oversight as to what's happening with the information, the collection of people's information under the emergency. So I'll definitely follow up with that.
No, I mean, I remember in university reading the works of folks like Giorgio Agamben talking about the state of exception and emergency orders. And I mean, there's a way in which, emergency powers are so exceptional and they're also kind of not exceptional. And sort of thinking about in these times, how do we think about understanding, and sort of appreciating the policy rationale behind some of these kinds of orders, but also trying to think about how do we ensure that folks aren't disproportionately affected, that low-income folks aren't disproportionately affected, that racialized folks aren't disproportionately affected. Those are conversations I think that we're going to have, and we're going to have to continue to have.
No, absolutely.
We're going to turn over to some audience questions. So we have a question from our sponsor, and Rehana Patel from Islamic Relief Canada. And by the way, a big thank you to our sponsor, Islamic Relief Canada. Here's their question. Staying indoors and physically isolated from friends and family can be especially difficult for many. As covered recently in the National Post, organizations like Islamic Relief Canada are getting out there to support those who need it the most. What do you recommend for the average Ontarian who wants to support those who need help right now? Like, what would you recommend an average Ontarian to do right now if they want to help their neighbor?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a number of things. I mean, there's the average Ontarian, I think, first of all, is already trying to find those opportunities. And so I want to say thank you to folks who are doing things like, you know, buying groceries for their neighbor who's a senior and doesn't want to risk, being exposed at a grocery store, for example. People who are making meals for neighbors and leaving them on their porch, or folks that are trying to phone their friends or their former coworkers just to keep them connected, to reduce that sense of loneliness and isolation. But there's also the bigger responsibility that people feel. It's sometimes that they need to undertake something more. What else can I do? And yesterday I went to my local food bank, and I gave a donation to my local food bank, and all kind of with proper distancing and everything, because these organizations, these helping organizations, and they still need to help people. And so what I identified that, I was hearing food banks are having a hard time, because not only is there, an issue around donations not coming in, but there's also more demand on the food banks. So I did that. I made the donation, but more importantly, I posted it online, and I put a challenge out there to a couple of people that I know, some of whom are very well known, and I challenged them to make a donation as well, and then to get four or five of their people that they know in their circles to challenge those folks to do the same. And there's a lot, and it doesn't have to be a food bank. I mean, there's lots of, so it could be the mosque. It could be a women's shelter. It could be, I mean, there, all of these services are still needing to help people. And with the, with the loss of income that people are facing, there's a lot more need out there, and there's a lot more anxiety, and there's a lot more stress. So I would say, if you are feeling like you want to do something, just think about, who is on the top of your mind today. Are you worried about kids going hungry? It's easy to get on Google and talk about, children's services in my community, services close to me, and yeah, it's very, very easy to find opportunities to reach out and to help out. And there's a lot of services that are new that are creeping up online, right? There's these caremongers, for example, that are doing this great work coordinating between what people who want have something to give and people who have some need. And it's just, and it's an amazing thing to see these groups of people online, total strangers coming together to create unique opportunities to support other people. It's absolutely inspirational.
Oh, thank you. I think that's completely on the ball. I mean, I think there are so many folks who are stepping out there on the front lines, getting out there to help out. And I think that care monitoring is so important, but also, make sure you take care of yourself too. This is also Farouk's advice. Make sure you take care of yourself and your family. These are tough times. And even just taking care of yourself is so important.
You're right.
Okay, a question from Fozia Mazha. We're hearing a lot about international students struggling. What are we doing to support them?
Well, that's, it's such a terrible situation with international students because they fall through so many of the cracks and they're so far from home and they can't get back home and their living situations have become in many cases precarious. So this is why we were recommending, these kinds of emergency funds for people. It shouldn't be about, how you define that person. They're a student, they're this, they're that. I mean, it's about humanity and it's about, stepping up and being there to help everyone. And we don't want to draw, we don't want to draw lines to keep people, prevent people from receiving help. We want to do quite the opposite. We want to erase those lines and make sure that everybody gets the support they need. But again, this is something that's a little bit lacking in our province, quite a bit actually, because there are no real opportunities for people to, for international students particularly, but others to get direct support from the provincial government. So it's really only the federal programs that are out there. And unfortunately, I know that a lot of international students are struggling right now. So, going back to our previous conversation, that's another place where people can reach out. If you know that there are, international students, if you're in a community where you have universities and colleges and sometimes private schools where there's lots of international students, if we'd find a way to try to reach out to those folks as well and give them some support because it's very challenging for them.
That's all our time. I'm going to ask you, I know that went by so fast, right?
It really did.
time flies by when we're engaging in these kinds of, I honestly felt like a really beautiful discussion. So thank you so much. Before I close off, I'm going to ask you to maybe provide a closing statement for maybe a minute, if that's okay with you.
Sure. I'm honored, Mustafa. Thank you so much. I want to just thank yourself and this sponsoring organization for hosting me today. And what I want to say to people is thank you. Thank you to all those folks who are staying home and socially distancing or physically distancing, I should say. We want to stay social. I appreciate that. And I know that everybody else appreciates it too. And this is how we're going to tackle this pandemic. But I mean, again, I think it's always important to acknowledge all those folks who are required to go to work. So whether you're in the healthcare sector, whether you're in the trucking industry and the supply chains, whether you're working as a transit driver, whether you're working in a pharmacy or a grocery store, a lot of our friends and neighbors are still having to go out every single day and risk exposure to the virus to make sure that the rest of us can stay home and stay safe. And so a big, huge thank you to those folks, to the first responders, to everyone who is doing what they need to do to keep us safe and to keep us well and to help us all in our own way tackle this virus. I'm really proud of that Ontarians have done. And I'm just looking forward to the other side of this when we can all kind of, get back to some kind of new normal maybe and spend, time together again, because it can be lonely, but thank goodness for technology. It helps us to stay connected.
No, and again, a huge thank you for coming on and joining us today. On a Friday, it honestly feels like even more of a blessed day. So thank you so much. This has been an incredibly informative session. I've learned so much from our discussion, and I'm sure many of our audience have as well. Thank you for joining us, and we at NCCM and at Islamic Relief Canada, we wish you and your family peace, safety, and health this COVID crisis and beyond.
Thank you so much. Can I say Ramadan Mubarak to everyone? Enjoy the holy month, and I'm sure you'll find ways to celebrate together.
Thank you so much.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation between NCCM CEO Mustafa Farouk and the leader of the official opposition here in Ontario, and of course the leader of the Ontario New Democratic Party, Andrea Horvath. I hope that conversation was very eye-opening. It answered a lot of the questions that you did have. If you do have any other questions, if you want to continue on knowing more information about this, be sure to follow NCCM on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And as well, you can also follow Leader Horvath on all of her social media as well. Thank you. Have a great day. Everybody stay safe, and we'll check back in next week. Take care, and masalam.
You've been listening to Profiled, an NCCM podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media. On Facebook and Twitter, it's at NCCM. And for Instagram, it's at NCCM_community. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back next week.